The reason we're here supporting Ukraine is not just because Ukraine is a good friend to Canada and Ukrainian people are good friends to us.
Але я думаю, що це тільки початок.
Найбільш неспокійно вчора було в районі Попасної.
Hello, this is Ukraine Calling. A weekly roundup of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main story. I'm Marta Dichok for Громадське Радіо in Kyiv, and here are the stories that caught my attention this week. The week began with the arrival of Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau for an official visit. His main message was,
the reason we're here supporting Ukraine is not just because Ukraine is a good friend to Canada and Ukrainian people are good friends to us. It's because the values, the principles that they're fighting for are the values and principles that we stand for and that we fight for.
The charismatic Canadian leader traveled with his oldest son, Xavier, International Trade Minister Chrystia Freeland, and a delegation of political, business, and community leaders. After a gala reception at the Mistetsky Arsenal Gallery, where Trudeau allowed practically everyone to take selfies with him, he met with Ukraine's President Poroshenko, Prime Minister Groysman, and other political leaders. He visited the Holodomor Museum and the memorial to the Heavenly Hundred killed in Kyiv's Maidan at the tail end of the Euromaidan protests. He then traveled to the Yavorno military base outside of Lviv, where he met with Canadian servicemen who were training Ukrainians. The highlight of the visit was the signing of the Canada-Ukraine Free Trade Agreement on July the 11th. We'll bring you commentary on the agreement by Minister Freeland, Ukraine's Prime Minister Groysman, Ukraine's ambassador to Canada, and expert analysis later in the show. Efforts to stop the fighting in the Donbas continued this week. Members of the Trilateral Contact Group, made up of representatives from Ukraine, Russia, and the OSCE, met again in Minsk on July the 13th. Although agreement was reached to further facilitate work of international organizations like the Red Cross on humanitarian issues, once again they failed to agree on a document which would separate the sides. In the meantime, during this past week, 13 Ukrainian soldiers were killed and 33 were wounded.
Two Ukrainian servicemen were killed and four were wounded.
There was some movement in the efforts to bring the former Yanukovych regime to justice. Prosecutor General Yuri Lutsenko announced on July the 14th that during raids, more evidence was uncovered for the case against snipers who killed protesters during the Euromaidan in February of 2014. They found parts of the weapons used in the shootings. Earlier in the week, Austria offered to increase their efforts in helping Ukraine to recover assets of Yanukovych's former allies that are in their country. On July the 12th, Austria's ambassador to Ukraine, Hermine Popeler, met with Ukraine's prosecutor's office to discuss how the two countries could deepen cooperation in this matter. Another city in Ukraine got a new name this week. Kirovohrad became Kropivnitskoye on July the 14th by an act of parliament. The regional capital in central Ukraine had been given Kirov's name in 1939 to honor the early Bolshevik leader who was assassinated in what was then called Leningrad and is now St. Petersburg. The quarter-million city now carries the name of a prominent Ukrainian actor and playwright, Marko Kropivnitsky, who was born in a nearby village. To help explain why the Canada-Ukraine Free Trade Agreement signed this week in Kyiv is important for both countries, Romadsky Radio spoke with a number of the key actors and an analyst. Here are the interviews. We reached Canada's International Trade Minister Chrystia Freeland by phone, and there was some interference on the line, so we apologize for the poor quality of the sound. Chrystia Freeland is Canada's international trade minister. She was instrumental in preparing the Canada-Ukraine Free Trade Agreement and traveled with Prime Minister Trudeau to Ukraine, where the agreement was signed this Monday, July the 11th. We reached Minister Freeland in Lviv. Thank you so much for finding the time to talk to Hromadske Radio. Minister Freeland.
It's great to talk to Hromadske and great to talk to you, Marta.
Thank you. Ukraine's Prime Minister Groysman explained the benefits of the Canada-Ukraine Free Trade Agreement for Ukraine in an interview he gave exclusively to Hromadske Radio, and we'll hear that later in the show. Minister Freeland, can you tell our listeners why Canada is interested in a free trade deal with Ukraine?
We are interested for two reasons. The first is strategic. As you know very well, Marcel, Canada has a long and very warm relationship with Ukraine. And that relationship is built partly on the very close human ties, but it's also built on our real understanding of the shared values between Canada and Ukraine, particularly today when Ukraine is facing this double burden of Russian annexation of part of its territory and Russian aggression against another, and needing to continue economic reform. And so for us, this free trade agreement is, first of all, deepening our strategic partnership and supporting Ukraine. We really believe that an essential part of Ukraine's fight right now is on the economic front. And by opening up more economic opportunities for Ukraine, that's a really powerful form of support. But secondly, we see real economic opportunities in Ukraine. We see opportunities in the agricultural sector. We see opportunities in the IT sector. We see opportunities in services, education, and we see opportunities in aerospace, which is an area of strength for both Canada and Ukraine. And I think evidence of the fact that this is really emerging potentially as a moment of real economic opportunity in Ukraine is that after our business forum, which we held in Toronto in the middle of June, since then we've already had a half dozen agreements signed between companies that got together then. And then just this week, on the occasion of the signing of our free trade agreement, we signed three more agreements, one with Bombardier in the train sector, one in the agriculture and innovation sector, and one in the educational sector. And all of this activity is happening, it's important to note, before the agreement has come into force yet, because what happened Monday was the agreement was signed. We still need to have it ratified by both our parliaments. So I think there are some new economic opportunities.
Ukraine's Prime Minister Groysman gave Громадське Радіо an exclusive comment on the agreement, and here's what he said.
The world today is a global village, but I think that the potential of Canada's economy and Ukraine's economy is not sufficiently utilized in our bilateral relations. So creating a free trade zone opens up reciprocity in investment, opens up markets. This is job creation, closer economic ties. And I would say that this agreement opens up a new phase in our bilateral relations. This was a shared initiative. Many people in the Canadian government and the Ukrainian government worked towards making this happen. Minister Freeland, the government of Arseniy Yatsenyuk, I joined this at the final stages of negotiations, and our Ministry of Economic Development and Natalia Mykolska, the deputy minister, and many Ukrainians. This was a collective effort which produced results. Agriculture, metallurgy, and other spheres where we can develop trade. I think this is just the beginning. We've just signed the agreement, and now we'll make it work. This is a free trade agreement with Canada. Canada has such an agreement with the EU. We have a similar agreement with the EU. So now we have this global reach.
Ukraine's ambassador to Canada, Andriy Shevchenko, shared his perspective. When you became ambassador to Canada, the Conservative Party was in power. Shortly afterwards, there was an election, and the Liberal Party won the election, and we now have a new Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau of the Liberal Party. In the time that you've been ambassador, have you seen any changes in Canada's policy towards Ukraine?
With the new government, I think we obviously see some differences in style. And we see some differences in the priorities of the new government. But overall, I think Ukraine is very privileged to enjoy support from Canada, no matter which party is in power. And I think the message of the new government in that sense is very clear, that Canada is in support of Ukraine's independence and of Ukraine's territorial integrity.
You accompanied Prime Minister Justin Trudeau on his visit to Ukraine this week. He had a number of important meetings. One of the things was the signing of the Canada-Ukraine Free Trade Agreement. Given the let's say, slight differences in corporate culture between the two countries. What challenges do you see in making this agreement effective?
Well, I'll tell about the free trade agreement and the new challenges in a second. But before that, I'll say that our major priority for the visit was, or my priority for the visit, was to make sure that the new Prime Minister of Canada falls in love with Ukraine, just like I have fallen in love with his wonderful country. And I think in that sense, it was quite a successful visit. Now, on the free trade agreement, to make the long story short, it means that in the next 7 years, we will get rid of 99% of the tariffs between the two countries. Most of them will be gone immediately after the treaty is ratified by the parliaments. And with the businesses, I think it means that we should find new appropriate words for Canadian businesses to explain that they should give Ukraine a chance, and they should give Ukrainian market a second look. Yes, some Canadian companies already have experience of dealing with Ukraine, unfortunately not always good experience. But there are so many changes in this country. I think the business environment is obviously improving, and our job is to make sure that the Canadian businesses see those changes.
The Trudeau visit comes on the heel of the Warsaw Summit, and there's a lot of discussion in Ukraine about the fact that war is continuing and looking for international support for the war effort. What were they hoping for, and what do you see that happened?
I'm really satisfied that he had a chance to go to the Yavoriv training base. And by the way, it's the largest military training base which is equipped according to the NATO standards in Europe. And I think we can get better use of that training base.
Sorry to interrupt. For our listeners who don't know what the Yavoriv base is, could you just explain what it is and what Canada's relationship with that
is? It's a military training base in the western Ukraine, very close from our border with Poland. And as of the moment, we have Canadian officers in that place, altogether around 200 who train Ukrainian officers. And so even while we talk, they're helping us to make our army stronger. When he spoke to Canadian officers and asked them what their service was like, and they told him extraordinary stories of their friendships and relations with the Ukrainian soldiers. They told the stories they heard from the Ukrainian soldiers. They told about the heroism of Ukrainian soldiers. And also they told the Canadian Prime Minister that they learned a lot from Ukrainian soldiers on some specific, very important military issues. Well, in the end of the day, Ukraine is now fighting a war against the second largest military of the world. It's conventional war with tanks, with artillery, with trenches, something that many armies around the world do not even think about anymore.
It's like World War One all
exactly,
over again.
Exactly. That's what Canadian soldiers told the Prime Minister. Like, we saw that in the films and read about that in the books. Now we know that if we deal with such an aggressive power as Russia, you should be prepared to fight that kind of war. But also it's about the hybrid war which Russia is fighting against us. So I think it was very important that the Canadian Prime Minister had a chance to talk to his people and to get this knowledge from them. And I really hope that he will find good words to bring this message back to Canada, to his government, and to the Canadian public. They should know that we appreciate so much this Canadian help. They should know, they in Canada should know that they should be very proud of their soldiers for what they do here.
Our guest is Dr. Mykhailo Vinnytsky, who was born in Canada, has a PhD in economics and sociology from Cambridge University in England, and has been living and working in Ukraine for the past 15 years. So he knows both Canada and Ukraine from the inside like very few people do, and has the analytical skills to help us understand this relationship. Dr. Vinnytsky, thank you very much for joining us.
With that slew of compliments, how could I possibly even... How could I have not come today?
Canada and Ukraine, they are very different countries, but they have one thing in common. They both live next door to a very powerful neighbor that in many ways defines a lot of their politics, economics, and their reality in some ways. Canadian professor Otis Subtenny a number of years ago described this as asymmetrical relationships. The Canada-US, Ukraine-Russia have these asymmetrical relationships that define them. And this is perhaps a basis for cooperation and understanding. Canada and Ukraine have just signed a free trade deal this week. Is this perhaps a way of looking at that relationship, the two middle powers working together because they understand the world in a very similar way?
I think we get into a trap, which actually is very, it's the trap that the Kremlin wants us to get into. It's the trap of the discourse of geopolitics. And I think that that's really a problematic trap. You know, just because someone at one point talked about middle powers, well, middle powers is really something that comes from the 1960s, after the Second World War. People were trying, or countries were trying to define themselves in sort of two superpowers and then middle powers. I don't think it's relevant. I think that, quite frankly, there are a lot of things that bring Canada and Ukraine, make Canada and Ukraine very similar, but I don't think geopolitics is one of them, because the asymmetrical relationship concept ignores the fact that Ukraine is next door to a very large economic power called the European Union, where Canada does not have an alternative economy next to it geopolitically than to the United States. So, I mean, I really don't buy the comparison. I do think, however, that first of all, from a very simple economic perspective, Canada and Ukraine have a lot of similarities. And that is, if we look at the structure of GDP, structure of the economy, if you take away Alberta, sort of the oil sands, and you take away the fisheries, what you're left with is the core of the Canadian economy, which is very similar to the Ukrainian economy. It's agriculture and it's services. This is what the Canadian economy is all about. And interestingly enough, the Canadian economy has traditionally been a small, medium business economy, as opposed to the United States, which is a large corporation economy. And if we look at what Ukraine is turning into now in a sort of a post-Maidan reality without Donbass, it's very much becoming a small, medium business type of economy. So I think there are an awful lot of economic similarities. But more importantly, I think this is something that we don't talk about enough. If you want to make a comparison worldwide between Ukraine and a country, and then the Ukrainian relationship with Canada and another country's relationship with another large power, another economy, we need to talk about Israel and the United States and Ukraine and Canada. The Canadian diaspora is the equivalent in terms of economic and political power in Canada to the Jewish diaspora in the United States. We have a massive resource in this country, which is very often underutilized. And I think that Canadian, I mean, Prime Minister Trudeau, when he was here, was very clear about the fact that there are 1.3 million Canadians of Ukrainian descent. And that is a very significant constituency. And he was very clear in his speech, for example, that we were both at, was he was mentioning the fact that he has two cabinet ministers that are of Ukrainian descent. And you know what? That makes for that. That really means a lot, both politically and economically. And I think the future of Ukraine is a very similar future to that of Israel, where Israel had 40 years of being in a perpetual war with a very strong friend behind it. And I think that the Ukrainian relationship with Canada and Ukraine's future is unfortunately a long-term military prospect. And we have I think Ukraine is lucky to have a very strong friend in Canada and a lot of political clout amongst Ukrainians in Canada.
Well, you've sort of answered my second question, which was, how important is Canada to Ukraine? Because there's a lot of talk about strategic partnership, special partnership. Canada was the first country to recognize Ukraine's independence 25 years ago. But in terms of...
That, by the way, you got to be careful with that when the Poles get really angry.
The first Western country.
Sorry,
absolutely.
The telegram from Poland came, I think, 30 seconds before the Canadian one did.
Yes, so indeed. Thank you for that. But in terms of real cooperation, has there been really a lot of cooperation between the two countries? Last week, when the NATO summit was starting, the talk here in Kyiv was about the United States and Germany, right. Not about Canada.
And I think that, you know what, I think we have a problem with public perceptions on both sides. Okay, so the Ukrainian public perception is we need to be friends with a strategic partner called the United States. But unfortunately, from a U.S. standpoint, Ukraine is just another conflict somewhere in the world, or just another, if you like, problem country. It happens to be in Europe. It happens to be, but it's not on the high priority list. For Canada, Ukraine is on the high priority list because of the Ukrainian diaspora, and also I think it's important that the the relationship is in fact very strong militarily. I mean, look, we've got, Canada has 200 military advisors in Ukraine, in Yavoriv. The United States has 200 military advisors in Ukraine. Let's look at the military might of these two countries. So the commitment from Canada of 200 advisors is massive compared to what the potential of the military might of Canada is, whereas the US commitment is well, pretty symbolic, let's put it that way. So I think that on the Canadian side, it's registered. The Canadians aren't necessarily talking about it enough. I mean, it's very symbolic that Prime Minister Trudeau did go to Yavoriv last week, and I think that is important, and he was supporting the Canadian troops and made a point of that. And look, the Canadian Prime Minister chose to come to Ukraine on his first international visit beyond the United States. Obviously, there was a NATO summit, but he could have gone to Germany. He could have gone to Brussels. He could have gone to South America. He could have gone to Asia. He chose to come to Ukraine. And I think that that's a very, very important symbolic act. Obviously, his first trip was to the United States. Well, okay, that's the asymmetrical relationship, if you like. But I think that obviously, when you're talking about NAFTA and a free trade zone and the largest unguarded border in the world, I think that that was a logical step. But the fact is that his first international trip beyond North America was to Ukraine. That is an important. I think that's an important symbolic gesture. Now, I do think that the implication of your question is correct, that the Ukrainian side is perhaps underappreciating that special relationship that Ukraine could have potentially even stronger ties with in Canada.
This week, the Canadian-Ukrainian Free Trade Agreement was signed here in Kyiv by Prime Minister Trudeau and Ukraine's President Poroshenko. You have been teaching at the Kyiv-Mohyla Business School for a number of years. Free trade agreements are wonderful documents. How realistic is the actual implementation of this document? Do you see that it will be successful given the somewhat different corporate cultures in the two countries?
You're being very, very polite and politically correct about corporate cultures. You're talking about corruption problems, etc. But look, at the end of the day, I think that one of the things that has happened at this point is very important. Normally, we have free trade agreements signed when there is already a very strong trade relationship between two countries. In this particular case, we're ahead of the game. We've signed a free trade agreement with the hopes that the small and medium business sector of Ukraine will take advantage, and the Canadian small and medium business sector will take advantage. Canada and Ukraine are competitors in the agro sector. Ukraine is number two exporter of grains in the world. Canada is number one exporter of grains in the world. So there's not going to be a lot of cooperation in agro specifically. Perhaps in investment there might be. But in other areas, there really will be. The IT sector, other services. I mean, there's already sort of the foundations are already there. And I think that there's a lot of potential. The issue is that the Ukrainian business community is, and the structure of Ukraine's economy is in a state of massive flux at the moment. We're moving away from an economy of financial industrial groups controlled by, 10 families. And already, this is one of the things I get really irked about when I hear Western analysts talking about the fact that Ukraine remains an oligarchic economy. Show me the oligarchs. The oligarchs that we have are bankrupt, or if they're not bankrupt, they're on the verge of. They have really strong, they've got massive losses over the last couple of years. The exception is Kolomoisky, of course, but that's another story. The point is that if you look at the structure of the Ukrainian economy today, it is massively changing, and it's changing very much into a small, medium business economy. Teaching at Kyiv-Mohyla Business School, there's one thing I've learned, and that is the learning potential of Ukrainian business owners and Ukrainian managers. They learn very, very quickly when there are opportunities. What the Canadian government has done at this point, and the Ukrainian government, obviously there's a symbolic act of supporting Ukraine, but one of the most important things that has been done is to open the door and to provide an opportunity. Knowing what I know about Ukrainian entrepreneurs, they're going to jump on it. And I hope that Canadian entrepreneurs jump on the opportunities as well.
Thank you very much, Dr. Vinitsky, for coming into the studio, and hopefully we will see you again on this show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Meanwhile, Crimean Tatars continue to use art to keep attention on their plight. They screened a new film in Kyiv's main movie theater on July the 12th called The Resistance and invited President Poroshenko. He came with his wife. And waiting to greet him on the red carpet were the legendary Crimean Tatar leader Mustafa Jamilov with Eurovision contest winner Jamala. Others continue to produce music. Here's a piece called Alan Dunya by Fayetuan, the first band to play rock music in the Crimean Tatar language. Later this month, the IMF Board of Directors is expected to consider disbursing the $1.7 billion loan which Ukraine needs to keep its economy on track. As a reminder to our listeners, the IMF suspended loans to Ukraine in October of 2015 because the country was not doing enough to combat corruption. To facilitate the resumption of lending, Ukraine's President Poroshenko spoke with IMF's Managing Director Christine Lagarde on July the 9th. An IMF technical mission visited Ukraine on July the 11th. And during this week, Ukraine's parliament passed a number of laws needed for lending to resume. This will be the focus of next week's shows, and we hope to have an interview with Natalie Yaresko, who was instrumental in securing IMF funding to Ukraine when she was Prime Minister in 2014-15. Tune in next week for a new episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Marta Dechok in Kyiv. Thanks for listening.